Okay, right, good evening. This is the fourth talk in the series Introduction to Kabbalah here at South Hampstead Synagogue. So, let's see where we're up to. Outline of the course. Okay, we looked at the history of the Kabbalistic tradition, basically looking at a lot of book covers. Then applying Kabbalah in the life of the individual, Torah study and mitzvot. Last week we looked at prayer and meditation, and so now the fourth talk and penultimate talk, Kabbalah in the life of a family, Shabbat and marriage. Okay, so we're going to try and tackle these two dimensions this evening. Now, first of all, with this rather amusing drawing, we're talking Jacob's dream of the ladder joining heaven and earth, right? You see that caption at the bottom? We are trying to appreciate our physical lives here in this world, which include the practicalities of having a job and working and daily life, and for that matter, the practicalities of being married and everything that goes into organized ordinary aspects of our life, including some very exciting and enjoyable aspects, but a sense of the spiritual at the same time. And so that's this concept of this ladder. I'm not sure if you can see, but it's sort of the four rungs are supposed to represent the four spiritual worlds, the world of action, asiya, and then beyond higher levels, which in fact we're going to look at in the next slide, which will give us a more clear depiction of these four worlds. And the idea is we have there at the bottom this world, and then you have asiya, action, which is sort of the spiritual dimension of this world, the spiritual dimension of the world that we're in, this physical world. And then there's a higher world, yetzirah, formation, higher still, bria, creation, higher still, atzilut, emanation, reaching into the infinite Ein Sof. If I'd have been more skilled at drawing this, it would have sort of floated off into the infinite instead of being so neatly as a circle as it is. Now, it's an interesting question about what direction one is moving in. Are these four worlds, like the picture of the ladder that we had before, you know, this ladder, we're going up the ladder, right? Isn't that what ladders are for? But on the other hand, there's coming down the ladder as well. And so, in fact, drawing these four worlds, you notice there's a sort of an arrow flowing downwards, because that flow from the higher level down into our world is, in a sense, what this whole process is really about, and the ambiguity of whether we're going up out of the physical world into the spiritual, or whether we're trying to draw the spiritual down into our world. That ambiguity is something inherent in Kabbalistic thought, and one could say that there are different teachers who would emphasize one aspect rather than the other. But the approach to this whole totality of thinking, which I am trying to communicate here as something within the Jewish community, is the Chabad look at it, the Chabad take, as it were, where the emphasis is very much on drawing the spiritual down into the world. Now, one might find other streams of thought, of Jewish mystical thought, where the quest is rather, as it were, reaching beyond, the way into like some sort of intense spirituality, remote. But the way which I think is most relevant to everyone is this particular way of looking at it, where we're talking about spirituality coming down into the world. So we're here in the world, yet there is the intimation and the sense of the spiritual at the same time. So we're not leaving the world, we're bringing something else into the world with us. Now, of course, a picture that we've seen almost every time, I imagine, and in fact in this session I've got it twice in our set of images here, are the Sefirot, because if you imagine any one of those four worlds, if you imagine one of those four worlds, then and then you look at it more closely in itself, there are those ten Sefirot, and there is this flow coming down. You see again, it's a flow coming downwards from the infinite, and it comes through this exalted upper Sefira or half Sefira, the divine will, Keter, and then we have wisdom, understanding, knowledge, and then we have kindness, severity, mercy, victory, submission, dedication, and at the bottom, kingship, fulfillment, the feminine. Now, we have here a certain pattern. We have a pattern of 6 and 1, which makes 7. Do you see the 6, in the image there, blue, the 6 blue spherot? There we are, those kind of, they're called the lower spherot, the upper 3, and that which is like completely beyond. So the upper 3 are like a different dimension, wisdom, understanding, knowledge. But the lower 7, the lower 6 plus 1, kindness, severity, mercy, victory, submission, dedication, and then kingship, malchut. Now that, malchut means kingship, and that expresses fulfillment, completion, wholeness, the feminine. Now, this is the sort of substructure of existence. This is the spiritual dimension of the divine, which then comes into being in each of those four worlds that we saw till it comes down to our earthly world. And so in our earthly world, well, at the beginning of the Torah, it talks about the process of creation. And so the first thing, the very obvious thing about the process of creation is that there are 6 days, and then the 7th, which is Shabbat. And so here it is ingrained in these 6 Sefirot, flowing into Malchut, kingship, the Shekhinah, Shabbat, in the same way that the 6 days of the week flow into Shabbat. We work during the 6 days of the week, organizing what we're going to eat and do on Shabbat, because we work at it during the week. We earn money, and with that we're able to buy the food that we're going to have on Shabbat. Shabbat is going to be a day when we're not going to be working, and so therefore we need some kind of input from the week. Now that input is actually a spiritual input. It's a flow which is flowing through the whole system of our lives, and it becomes this cycle of during the days of the week flowing into Shabbat, and then from Shabbat, as it were, flowing on. Because you could look, if we just go back again to those four worlds, you see, if we're at any particular level, so the Malchut, the bottom level of one world, becomes the highest level of the next, and so it's flowing down, it's flowing onwards. So we're on this sort of cycle which is flowing down and then further and further, and each time there is this climax of kingship, fulfillment, the feminine, the point of creation, the point of birth, like the baby in the womb who is born and flows on and creates the next generation. So that is happening all the time. It's happening on a weekly cycle within the days of the week, and of course it's there within marriage as well. So there's a sense in which we're tackling the Shabbat and marriage concept together, although they do separate out as well. So here we have sort of a few parallel images. The divine Sfirot, in which we have six Sfirot and Malchut kingship, the seventh. The Torah account of creation, 6 days and Shabbat. Our week, 6 work days and Shabbat. And husband and wife. So now, whether it's exactly the husband who works, it might be the husband, but it's that sense of a relationship which is viewed in this sort of Kabbalistic paradigm, which extends also into husband and wife together. Now, going a step further, let's look at one or two aspects of Shabbat. Here we have the idea of Shabbat candles. So Shabbat is really the enthroning of the woman. It's really the point where womanhood is expressed in the most powerful way. And the way in which the wife and the daughter, in Chabad custom, and many other people do that as well, the little girl also lights one candle for Shabbat, and then the mother lights 2 candles. That idea that every woman has got that spiritual power, as the Zohar says, to bring peace to the world. Now, it's an interesting quality of womanhood to bring peace to the world, but let's just first of all understand how the candles are seen as bringing peace. You see, there is an interplay between mystical teachings and halakha, and Jewish law. So in Jewish law, Shabbat candles are seen as very important. If you don't have enough money for wine, so you can either buy wine or buy candles, well, you should buy candles instead of wine for Shabbat. Why are the candles so important? The idea is the candles are the only source of light in the room. Because if the room is light, then people feel more comfortable with each other, whereas if it's dark, people will start tripping over things and blaming each other, and it won't have the atmosphere of peace. So that's the code of law. That's the perspective from the Talmud that the code of law has. The Zohar looks at this concept of peace in a more spiritual and general way, that the fact of there being the Shabbat candles and the spiritual dimension within those candles, that is bringing peace to the world. It's not just that in the house it's a more peaceful atmosphere because there's a bit of light in the room. It's that there is something spiritual about these candles and the power of woman, the woman having the ability to bring that. Because when we look, when we consider those Sfirot, there's a sense in which, let's just go back to them for a moment, there's a sense in which all of those Sfirot are really invisible until you come to the bottom level of kingship fulfillment. The image that I have in my mind is when you look at a film in the cinema. So you have the projector, which is like way off, casting its beam onto the screen, in fact just over here. You can't see the light from the projector to the screen until it hits the screen. So the stream of Sfirot are the sort of invisible flow of light, but you can't see it. It's only when it hits the screen and the screen is light, kingship. That's the feminine. That's where it's actually seen. And that's the image of beauty, womanhood. The beauty of womanhood is the manifestation of this spirituality in a tangible way. It's something which can actually be seen. And so therefore, when we come to Shabbat, and particularly the lighting of the Shabbat candles, which is a kind of a revelation of this beauty and spirituality. And the woman is able, and even a little girl, are able to pull that off. They're able to light the Shabbat candles and bring out something special. Now, in the normal pattern, the ideal pattern, let's say, when the wife has lit candles before sunset, and then the people start gathering around the table, the Shabbat table, they sing Eshet Chayil. Now, Eshet Chayil, a woman of valor, is from the book of Proverbs, from the end of the book of Proverbs, expresses the glory of woman, a woman of valor who can find, and also the divine presence, the Shekhinah. So it's the divine presence in the home and the wife of the home, the woman in the home, who are both being extolled by this poem, this acrostic poem. It's written, it goes out of, each line begins with the next letter of the alphabet, like a number of our prayers, and womanhood relating to also the world of speech, malchut, kingship, relates to the world of speech, God speaking and bringing the world into being. God spoke, let there be light, let there be a firmament. So there is this power of speech, which is also revelation. You see, speech in relation to thought is revealing something. The thought is invisible, like the rays of light, which you can't see at all. But when it hits the screen, then suddenly it's visible. In the same way that thought is in the mind, and then suddenly becomes tangible as speech. Even to oneself, one can be thinking about something, but one hasn't yet actually verbalized it. It hasn't condensed into a statement, and suddenly you have this statement which is putting a real definition to what you're thinking about. So that's the moment of Malchut, of kingship, which can then go from words in the mind to words in speech in general. So there is the Eshet Chayil atmosphere, and of course the melody with which Eshet Chayil is sung at the Friday night table is very often the melody which is sung when the groom comes to the bride at a wedding. And so one has this mixture of images, that it's both a spiritual spiritual union. We're actually talking about it within the home, and of course there's another prayer, Lecha Dodi Likhat Kala, come my beloved, my good friend, to meet the bride, Penei Shabbat Mekabla, we will receive the face of Shabbat, which is also a mingling of this Shabbat bride image. And then we come to make kiddush. Now, in order to make these pictures, I took one or two things from the internet, and this one I just chose to give the source where it's from. I was actually looking for this kind of goblet, which is flat, because that flat goblet has the idea is that the goblet is held in the palm of the hand, and the five fingers surround the goblet. That's like the mystical way of holding a goblet, and it has to do with the quality of five. You see, the world of speech has a dimension of five, which are the five types of consonants which break up the melody, the pure melody of just a musical note, a sound that the person is making, which could just be music, wordless melody. It's then broken up by five kinds of consonant, which are described in Sefer Yetzirah, the Book of Creation, an ancient Kabbalistic work, mystical work. But they're the five kinds of consonant that are taught in modern schools of linguistics: fricatives, dentals, labials, sibilants, and gutturals. So there are these five types of consonant. Only the click, maybe you can do it, Wendy. Can you do the click? The cause actually. They're called you see, there's five dinim, five aspects of severity about the feminine, and those aspects of severity are the chilukei dibur, and then it's a chel. I don't remember exactly the terminology, but for these five types of consonants. It escapes me in a second. Maybe it'll come back. So there is the hand, therefore, with the five fingers holding the vessel. Incidentally, if there's a man in the home, it's customary that the man makes kiddush. But if there is no man in the home, the woman should make kiddush. Kiddush should be made, whether it's made by a man or a woman. The normal structure is that it's made by a man, and it's almost like a form of communication. You know, the wife lights candles, and the man makes kiddush and shares the wine from the kiddush. But if not, then the woman should make kiddush. So a woman living at home, alone at home, should make kiddush, or her husband's away, should make kiddush herself. So there is the goblet representing this sphira of kingship, the feminine, and the wine is a spiritual flow which flows through the whole system of the sphira, coming perhaps particularly from the sphira bina, understanding, and it flows down through the system into that vessel of the goblet. So if we look at a few little explanations of this, you see the goblet in Hebrew is a kos, and kos, you can see the Hebrew word there, kaf vav samach. Now kaf is 20, we're reading the top line. Kaf is 20, vav is 6, samach is 60, makes 86. Right? As it happens, according to a great halachic scholar of a couple of generations ago, 86 milliliters is the minimum measure for a goblet. So it happens, you know, how milliliters got into the picture. Yeah, but he worked it out. You know, he worked out what the Talmud says, how big a goblet should be, and he works it out to 86 milliliters, 86 cc. And my day they call it cc. So that is the 86 is actually the gematria of the word Elohim, which is a name for God. Now I've written a kuf instead of a hey. Aleph, it would be Aleph Lamed Hey Yud Mem. So that's Aleph is 1. Look at the next line in the brackets on the left. Aleph is 1, Lamed is 30, Hey is 5, Yud is 10, Mem is 40. That's 86. So there's something divine there. But it's a quality of the divine which relates to nature. Hateva. Hey is 5, Tet is 9, Vet is 2, Ayin is 70, also makes 86. So there we have this quality of the goblet representing this receptacle which expresses godliness in the way of Malchut, which is in the way of Elohim, as opposed to Yudke Vavke, which is like the flow down, coming down into the Elohim. And like Hashem, Elokeinu. You see, Hashem and Elokeinu. And so, coming into Elokim, which is the expression of nature, nature as the revelation of the divine. There's a sense, nature can be seen as a concealment of God or a revelation of God. And during the week, you could say it's hiding godliness. But on Shabbat, it's revealing godliness. You see, there's suddenly this change, change taking place on Shabbat, where the physical becomes the expression of the spiritual. Instead of there being a certain tension between the physical and the spiritual, as there might be during the week, suddenly the physical and the spiritual join together and one expresses the other. And the wine, now wine is yayin, yud, yud, nun, that's 10 and 10 and 50, makes sod. Samach Vav Dalet, 60, Vav is 6, and Dalet is 4. So they both add up to 70. Nichnas Yayin Yatsa Sod. When the wine comes in, the secret is out, because wine and secret. So there is this wine. Now wine has a certain severity, it's got a certain danger about it. Like when wine first comes along in the Torah, it's in a problematic way with Noah drinking wine and getting drunk, and later on you have Lot drinking wine and getting drunk, even worse. So that's one of the reasons we say the Chaim, when we drink any strong drink, that this should be in a positive way, not in a negative way. That should be something good, should be a good result. Now on Shabbat, the wine is suddenly beautiful and positive. You see, and that's the power of Shabbat, transforming the negative possibility is suddenly that's right. It's been sanctified, it's been transformed, it's the negativity has been neutralized. At the Seder night, in order to really get to the depth of holiness in the wine, we pour out the 10 drops representing the 10 plagues in order to get rid of the negativity in the wine. And then instead of it being Yayin Hamashaker, the wine which makes one drunk, which is negative, it becomes Yayin Hamasameach, the wine which makes one joyful. So that's the stages of the wine. But meanwhile, we have this goblet of wine. Let's just see this goblet. There was a beautiful story of this lady. This is from the Yad Vashem site, incidentally, where Esther Eisen, born 1929, she went through the Holocaust, managed to survive, thank God, went back to her hometown in Lodz, and found this goblet, which had been in her home, and she managed to find it and took it with her back to Israel, where she lives now. So, but that's that image of the goblet and the power, the spiritual force which is there within the goblet. Now we come to another dimension of the Shabbat meal, the challah loaves, the loaves of bread. Well, the halachic concept about the challah loaves, I mean, one is they represent the double portion of manna which the Jews got when they were traveling through the desert, and on Friday there would be a double portion, and on Saturday they didn't find manna in the desert, and so the loaves, the two loaves, represent this double portion. Now the manna, man in Hebrew, is something very spiritual, and it's food, but it's a very spiritual kind of food. And so there is this sense of spirituality that you can eat. You know, it's as if we're suddenly entering a kind of a middle realm where there is physicality and yet it's spiritual at the same time. And so we're all the time walking on that that join between the physical and the spiritual. That's always there in the Shabbat atmosphere. And also another thing about the challot, they represent the 12 loaves of the showbread in the temple, lechem hapanim, the bread with faces, the bread which is intended to be seen in some way, because the bread was made in some kind of rectangular way that you could look at it and you would see different aspects of it. So sometimes one would imagine the plaiting of the challah to represent the 12 loaves. And some people have it more distinctly, that it's like 12 loaves stuck together. Now, one can buy challah. Here we are in a country where, or in a town, let's say, where challah is available and people can buy challah. But if I can tell you a secret, baking one's own challah is a form of practical Kabbalah. Practical Kabbalah is the real magic dimension of Kabbalah, where one really transforms things in the world. And the fact of a woman baking her own challah, that has a tremendous effect on husband and children. So and it's a very beautiful step, that ability, you know, to somehow making the time to bake challah, and the baking of the challah. There's something very beautiful about the aroma of the baked challot. And that is something very spiritual. And so then the husband takes the chalor and he puts them together and makes the blessing. It's another spiritual moment. So we have the lighting of the candles, the singing of Eshet Chayil, the saying of Kiddush, and then each person drinking from the wine, and then the actual challah, and then we have the general atmosphere of the Shabbat table, where the table at any time, but particularly on Shabbat, is compared to the altar in the temple. There's a very visionary part of Yechezkel, of Ezekiel's book in the Tanakh, where an angel is showing him around the temple, and he comes to the altar, and the angel says, "Zeh haShulchan Asher lifnei Hashem." This is the table which is in front of God, which is before God. So the altar, the table, is always like an altar, the table at which we eat, and that's why we have salt, because the salt represents the salt sprinkled on the offerings in the temple. There was always salt. And the reason why there is salt, because when God created the world, it says in Bereshit, he divided the upper lower from the lower water. So there was, everything was water, and then the water was divided. So there's the Mayim Elyonim, the upper water, which is like heaven, and the lower water, and in the middle is the universe and the world. So the Mayim Tachtonim Bochim, the lower water weeps. And they say, Anan bi'inan, this is in Aramaic, Anan bi'inan le mehevei kodom malka. We want to be before the king. We don't want to be so remote in the lower world. Like beyond, lower, in this very low realm. So God says to them, don't worry. You will also have a place in the korbanot, that there will be salt, which comes from the water, from the lower, from the sea. You will be there, and so you will actually be there at the temple offering. So, of course, we represent this by having salt at the table, and all that applies whenever we eat, but particularly on Shabbat, the idea of dipping the challah in salt, and then the words of Torah and the Shabbat Zmirot add to the sacred atmosphere, together with everything else that gets talked about at the Shabbat table. And, of course, the idea of having guests. For Shabbat, the Zohar says the guest at one's festive table is like the presence of the divine. You know, so the wife is the presence of the divine, the Shekhinah, but also it's important to have guests as well, if one can. And the old-fashioned Jewish community in Eastern Europe, there would always be sort of poor travelers passing through. And so after the prayers on Shabbat, the shamash would organize, this guest goes to that home, and that guest goes to the other home. And very often, you know, people are vying to get guests. It's a very important and very beautiful atmosphere of Shabbat. And in fact, in many traditional synagogues, where they're in Crown Heights in 770, they're very often visitors, and it's always, if they haven't got somewhere to eat, normally they do, but organizing this. So the Shabbat table is really a sacred atmosphere. And the conclusion of the meal is grace after meals. You see there, that little bench, as it's called. And that's actually a very spiritual moment. There one is, you know, there are traditional melodies, but it's a few minutes of actually speaking directly to God. Baruch atah Hashem, you know, God who feeds everyone. It's a moment of being with the divine together with being with the family around the table. It's something special. So we are now moving through from Shabbat into marriage. So having started off with Shabbat and marriage together, in a sense, so we're now moving into the marriage dimension, which in a way is the marriage dimension of Shabbat, and also the concept of marriage in general. Now, as it says over there, Shabbat expresses the union of the Sfirot, in other words, the upper Sfirot bonding, flowing into the Sfira Malchut, the Sfira Kingship, and the bond of the spiritual with the physical. It is a taste of the world to come in this world. From the Kabbalistic perspective, particularly, marriage also has these qualities. So there also is this sense of the union of the Sfirot, the union, the unity of marriage, the bond of the spiritual and the physical. There's a physical dimension of marriage, but that is also something spiritual of the most exalted level. And it is something very intense. So let's try and move on. And we are looking at, well, we're going to the very beginning of the Torah. And Rashi, in his commentary on the Torah, talks about Adam and Eve. How Adam and Eve were first created. So the general narrative, as most people read it, is that Adam was created, there's a man, and then God took a rib from this man, and the rib is called Tzela, and with that rib, God fashioned woman. So there used to be a feminist magazine called Spare Rib. because understandably saying, you know, that's what it's saying, that woman is just a rib of man. Now, it's interesting, there are Jewish commentaries which read it in that way as well. But Rashi does not take that view. Rashi takes the view that when it says tzela, it doesn't mean a rib. Tzela means a side. And he quotes a verse, Uletzela HaMishkan, on the side of the sanctuary. So tzela means a whole side. So when it says that God took the tzela of Adam, what he was doing was taking one side. And so in other words, Adam and Eve were created as one being, back to back, like, as it were, Siamese twins. One male and one female, and they are both together with male and female characteristics back to back. And then what happens is dividing them, separating them at the back. And then so the back is then filled in as a smooth, as it were, anonymous, closed part. And the actual characteristics of the male and the female are there at the front, and they are separated. So now, as the Torah says, they always want to come back together. Therefore, a man leaves his father and his mother and joins with his wife, and they become one flesh, as it says there in Genesis. And so that is their return to their original unity. Now, the Kabbalistic Hasidic perspective on this is that in fact people are created as half a soul. You see, there's a sense in which one is half a body. The body is really half of a unity which is both bodies together. And the soul is also half. And so the fact of the two people coming back together in marriage and being unified together, that again is a unity. And here's where I put in that same picture of the Sfirot, because it is the Sfirot bonding together, this flow of Sfirot from above, bonding together with kingship from below, which receives the kingship, the feminine receives the masculine, and that bonding together, that is really the bonding in order to achieve an essential, original unity. Now, that expresses a quality of fulfillment. And there's a description of two kinds of radiance, two kinds of flow are described in Kabbalistic and Hasidic literature. A flow from above to below, radiance from above to below, as it were, the male flow. Radiance from below to above, the feminine flow, the feminine reaching towards the male in that bonding in that sense, it might be, we might be talking about a look across the room, you know. It might be something very intimate and very physical and biological, or we might just be talking about something very, very subtle, and, you know, the way husbands and wives have ways of communicating with each other, despite all the different things that are happening in the middle, and one little look. So there is this this sense of this ability to bond together with the help of God. And then we have the sense of separation, of exile, as it were, of disunity, and for different reasons and in different aspects, different features of the relationship, and then ultimately a bonding together in a redemptive way, coming back again in with this sense of unity and bonding and togetherness. Now, in the creation of human men and women, God built into the system a kind of a cycle, at least at a certain stage of life, a cycle where there is separation and then unity. And that cycle of separation and unity, symbolized by the mikveh, where the ritual pool which the wife goes to, which then is leads towards a unity with a sense of redemption and of wholeness. Now, it's interesting that a woman who is pregnant no longer has to go to the mikveh, and she is pure all the time, and there is all the time this redemptive sense. And also a woman who goes beyond a certain age, beyond the menopause, there is also this concept of a permanent sense of spiritual unity. And in fact, the Lubavitcher Rebbe used to encourage a woman who had maybe never been to the mikveh, and who is now beyond the menopause, but she should go once to the mikveh, because then she enters into that state of spiritual purity forever. It's an interesting concept, the idea of an older person going to the mikveh and entering into that spiritual state, because there is a sense of spiritual bonding all the way through life. And the physical union between husband and wife is something which reaches into the highest levels of holiness. And it really is something which is sacred. And the next image that I employed over here, like the temple in Jerusalem, this is actually a picture of the model of the temple in the Holy Land Hotel. I was given special permission to take photos of it. That is, you know, that sense of a sacred realm. And if you imagine, like, going into the Holy of Holies, and in the Holy of Holies you have the golden ark, and on the golden ark there are the two keruvim, made of gold, and the sages tell us one is male and the other is female, and they are sometimes embracing, the sense of this very, very spiritual dimension which is actually there at the root of marriage in its most spiritual form. Two half souls which are bonding together. And we actually see that bond, and of course they're reaching into higher realms when they bond together. And if other aspects of biology are appropriate at that moment, so they may draw a soul into the world, a baby who's going to be born. But there's also the idea that every union draws some kind of spirituality into the world, even if the woman is already pregnant or it's long past the time of having children together, but nonetheless something spiritual and holy is being brought into the world. So there is always a meaning, a spiritual meaning to this union. And of course the point, the moment when the two half souls actually join is at the wedding. It's the wedding which is that moment of unity. And then if we look at the words for Ish and Isha, now I'm not sure if you can see, but the Yud of the word Ish, Aleph Yud Shin, so the Yud is in blue, and Isha, you've got the letter He, so you have two words, Eish, fire, and then you have Yud and He together. Now Yud and He together is the divine name. So it says in the Talmud, Ish v'Isha, man and woman, husband and wife, Zachu, if they merit, Shechina Shchuya Beinehem. The divine presence dwells between them, together with them, and it's with them in their home, and in every aspect of their lives, including the most intimate. And of course there is a danger, especially in our society, the danger of fire, and here we have the Aleph Shin being emphasized, the fire. It's interesting that the Talmud, talking about this, emphasizes the fire. But the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe, when he talks about it in a famous discourse of his, he doesn't mention the fire. He only talks about the holiness. You know, so stress the holiness. But of course there are negative possibilities, and so care is needed. Now, because the divine presence is being revealed at a wedding, that is why the tradition is for a wedding to be a very joyful occasion. And in fact, the Talmud speaks of, you know, here, if you can see, there's a table being held up, and the one on the right is the Chatan, and the one on the left is his brother-in-law, as it happens, and they are dancing together on the table, you know, like it's a jolly moment at a wedding. And that joyfulness about a wedding is described in the Talmud, that there was various rabbis used to rejoice in very colorful ways, and one of them, who was a leading rabbi, he used to juggle sticks of, you know, like juggle branches of hadassim, of myrtle, and he would juggle them at a wedding, and the other rabbis were shocked, you know, this isn't, you know, that's right, an important rabbi, he should behave with more decorum, yes, that wonderful English word. And when he passed away, there was suddenly a sort of a great light over his dividing him from everyone else, and suddenly they realized he is greater than everyone else, and they began discussing why is he greater, and so they said, you know why? Because of the way he used to dance at a wedding. Now, why did he dance at a wedding in that way? Precisely because the divine is being revealed at a wedding. It's a most incredible thing. This revelation of the divine, the Yud and the He, from the Ish and the Isha, the man and the woman, that's something tremendous. And if you're sensitive to that, you respond in a very intense way. And even if we're not sensitive to it, we know that it's there. And so therefore comes the idea of tremendous joy and dancing and happiness at a wedding. And so then you come to the family. The husband, the wife, the son, and the daughter. And here we have the four letters of the divine name, Yud and He, and the son and daughter, Vav and He. You see, the Yud extends into a longer form, into the Vav, and the He, the daughter, looks just like her mother. So there you have the Yud Ke Vav Ke. Together they form the divine name, and in fact, that is what the Jewish home is. The husband and wife together, making the divine presence dwell in their home, their personal temple. And if we come back to a Shabbat image, at the Friday night meal, Shabbat meal, the family come together, wife and daughters light candles, the husband makes kiddush, together they are joining souls, bringing a taste of redemption. Okay. Are there any questions?
My question.
Yeah.
Is that I don't understand the numbers. How the letters relate to the numbers. On goblet and wine.
Right. Okay,
I know there is some relevance to numbers, but I don't understand.
Okay, so let's have a look at that.